Everyone, welcome to the Mocha Bar Show. I'm Gabe, your host as always, and with me I have a very special guest, Maya Middlemiss. She is an author, podcast host, speaker, and a knowledge expert on all things future of work related. And I'm excited to talk to her because this is something that I am passionate about. And as somebody who has been a remote worker for several years, I feel that this impacts me greatly. So Maya, thank you for joining me. And I'm excited to hear about everything that you're working on, your book, your podcast, where you talk to some interesting people about everything that they're doing. You know, I liked the episode on building communities, building nomad communities. And yeah, so please tell us a little bit about yourself that I didn't cover.
Well, thank you for that amazing welcome. Thank you for inviting me on your show, Gabe. It's great to be talking to you and your viewers and listeners. It's quite strange in a way to be introduced as an expert on the future, because the exciting thing about the future is it hasn't happened yet. But the fascinating thing is the way that it's so unevenly distributed and leaves us clues in a kind of weird time travel-y way. We can start to look at what's going on around us, the trends that are being signaled, and try our best, at least as storytellers, to extrapolate those trends and see where things might be going, at least directionally, and think about the choices that we make now, which might affect the way we live and work in the future. That's what fascinates me about it all anyway.
Nice. No, and this is, you know, this is really, it's exciting because like you said, nobody really knows the future. You know, I in my previous field of audiovisual, there was a term that was commonly tossed around, which was we have to future-proof systems, future-proof. Mm-hmm. Problem is we don't know what the future is going to hold. We only know, we can only try to discern from things that have happened previously or are currently happening from technologies that we currently have available to us, whether it's, you know, Zoom or some other technology that allows people to connect remotely, work remotely, and have a modicum of, you know, a life outside of work because it makes it faster for them to get home or they are home already. Where do you see is sort of the next pivotal, because you're up on emerging technologies, what do you see is going to be the next big stage, basically? Ooh. The next phase in technology that's going to basically say, well, we don't have to do this. You know, things are going around the metaverse, which I don't understand on many levels. I'm not going to pretend to. So I don't have a qualified question to ask you on that because I don't really understand it. So what do you see as the next phase in technology?
I'm so glad you started with a nice, easy little question. No, it's such an important one because obviously there are things that we can see going on. We can see trends, and some of them may be more visible and high profile than others. And there are those black swan events that nobody can see. I remember writing sponsored tech content in the first few weeks of 2020 about what the trends were going to be in collaboration technology. And of course, all the things I was writing about, video calling, cloud-based apps, increased connectivity and so on, they were all there. But of course, nobody knew how the world was going to shift on its axis by something that hadn't even left one country at that point. So because we wrote most of that stuff before Christmas anyway, you know, because you've got to try and project into the future. What's interesting now, looking back on that huge event, is how many of those trends were already in place. And all that really happened was an acceleration. You know, work from home was not invented in 2020. Video calling was not invented in 2020. Lots of people were already using these things. What is continually shifting is the technology that makes it easy and affordable and available. For example, the rollout of 5G, that's going to make a huge difference in terms of distant collaboration. How that will unfold, I don't know. I mean, your colleagues at Zoom will have something in the works which is going to use that heightened bandwidth. We have people talking about metaverses and virtual reality. There are already workplaces using that for different kinds of collaboration. Whether we all have to be funny avatars with big heads and sit in our offices wearing uncomfortable headsets, I don't see that as the future personally. But I can see places that we will converge to collaborate on specific projects, and we will find ways to use that technology in a way that makes it even more natural. But I think we should acknowledge that what we've got now is pretty good. You and me talking through a screen, it's not like I think you're just there through the glass, but you can suspend disbelief, particularly one-on-one. The tools that we have and that were made available very rapidly and often free of charge during the pandemic lockdowns are actually pretty good. And I think, you know, if you try to imagine if we'd had to cope with this even 10 years ago, how much more difficult it would have been. And of course, everybody's experienced that now, and they expect to be able to tap a button and talk to anybody, see anybody anywhere in the world. And they expect that to be high resolution, real time, instant collaboration. And now that people are free, more or less, to go and have their end of the conversation wherever they choose, it unlocks so many exciting possibilities. And that's why it's brilliant to be writing about it and talking about it.
I love it, because so far, you know, like what you just said is so true. This wasn't just invented during the pandemic. Like, let's hurry up and invent these tools. Zoom was already out for 8-9 years at that stage. And, you know, all these other technologies were already in existence. Obviously, email existed long before, you know, Zoom ever did. And it was just sort of a rush adoption of tools that were in place, which I find was so beneficial to businesses. And it showed them that there's a different way. So now when I see businesses, Apple famously comes to mind, because they did a big piece, everyone back to the office, and then, okay, well, 2 days or 3 days out of the week, and then, okay, well, we'll push it back for a few more months, whatever. And then, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, you know, a famous Canadian author who's written a lot of think pieces on business and processes, you know, caught me by surprise because of who he is and how he has famously stated that he writes his books, came out with a piece where he basically said that remote work, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact quote, was the end of the workforce and collaboration as a whole, that people are just sitting at home in their pajamas, not doing anything. And I think he famously ended it with, you know, what are you doing to yourselves? And it was, I found it not only condescending, but, you know, extremely privileged point of view. I have a feeling that you don't feel that way.
Well, I think there are an awful lot of people trying to adjust to new circumstances. And there are people who are used to being in authority and making quick decisions about these things. And sometimes they're being pushed by media to, right, come on, what's your policy? What's happening now? Lockdown's over. And so it's difficult, particularly in some traditional organizations, quite hierarchical organizations, to come up with policy on the fly, something for the press release, right, everybody back to the office. Oh no, everybody back to the office 2 days a week. It's easier for some smaller, more flat hierarchical organizations, more agile teams, to admit a little bit of uncertainty and admit that they're still figuring this stuff out, that maybe we're trying to find the best way to collaborate now with everything we've learned, everything that's changed, everything that people have discovered about themselves and the best way they work, and bring that back to the office and have a conversation about how we want to move forward and collaborate. That's the courageous and honest thing to do, I think. But how many vast international corporations in traditional industries are going to do that? And the sad truth is, amongst all of that, that there are a whole lot of layers in the middle that might not be needed anymore, of people who pushed paper around or watched other people working and checked that they were doing so. They're questioning their role and their position in that structure. And, you know, I think there's an awful lot of nostalgia mixed in with that too, because going back to the office will not mean going back to 2019, whatever that looked like for you or for your life. And you can't erase that experience people have had, in the same way that you can't say, well, it was all right for everybody to work unsupervised when we had no choice, but now I want you back where I can see you. And it does reflect a real sense of them and us, which I think is embodied in the Gladwell remarks that, you know, most people can't be trusted to maintain culture and connection and relationship unless they're sat next to each other, even if they're sat next to each other working online, which is what an awful lot of people were doing 90% of their time anyway in the office before they all got sent home. So it's not just for people like Gladwell, who can write his books from any coffee shop in New York or anywhere in the world, which, you know, he doesn't go and sit in a cubicle to do that. So it's pretty hypocritical anyway. And with everything he has studied and written about human behavior, I must say it was a little bit surprising, but I don't know, maybe it comes down to all the work he's done about quickly forming impressions and blinks, that there are certain people who belong in offices, and there are other people who are creative and free and can be trusted to be productive in that way. I was quite taken aback, I must say.
Yeah, I think that seems to be the general consensus. There's a great podcast, and not right now. I can't remember who does it. But it's a marketing podcast by the VP of marketing from HubSpot, and it's mm-hmm. a really good one. I can't remember the name of it right now, but they called him out and dressed him down, like talking about things where he talked about his usual work routine. He wakes up, goes to his favorite coffee shop, gets his favorite latte, and goes to the library for research. And it's like, that's not an office. Like, that's a very...
Yes,
but anyway,
exactly. That's enough about you, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's your podcast. You have a great podcast where, you know, you talk to every, you know, it's called The Future of Freelance. And you talk to people in the industry. I think two of my favorite ones was the one about building nomad communities and the one mm-hmm. like scaling solopreneurs. How do you decide on the topics that you want to talk about? And how do you decide who to speak to, like who to go after? Because these are great topics and you have great speakers. So like Imogene Cook, I think, was your last one.
Yes.
And that one was fabulous. I was just like, I was listening to it and I was like, ooh. And I was like, this is really good stuff. And if whoever is watching or listening this, I'll put it all in the show notes, but you really should check it out.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, I struggle as a podcast host sometimes to come up with topics or, you know, mm-hmm. and this is why I think I told you earlier, like I'm not a journalist. I sort of just let the conversation go or progress or devolve, however you look at it, to wherever it's going to go. And I'm always fascinated by the creative mind and, you know, the ingenuity to come up with a topic and find the right person for it. This still happens that with you, this sort of like resonated when, you know, and when I saw, you know, who you were, I was like, oh, I want to talk to her. Absolutely. I want to talk to her. So it was just like with you, it was an easy decision. But
I think quite often it is often that way around for me too. If I come across somebody who's doing interesting work in the mm-hmm. space around freelancing and the future of work and working independently, because the show is called The Future is Freelance. And obviously that's a statement which I'm throwing out there as something that I believe in and that my show sponsors Solo believe in, because they provide software support for independent operators and solopreneurs. So we started with that central thesis that the future is freelance, but beyond that, that can take so many different forms. And for some people, freelance is working from home. It might be writing novels next to Gladwell in the coffee shop, but we're not going to talk about him anymore. For other people, it might mean digital nomading your way around the world and, you know, living in different countries and going to different co-workings. For some people, it might mean regular collaboration and different gig teams. For some people, it might mean the early stages of a startup that's going to scale and grow. So people's response to the idea of freelancing as the future is very different. And I suppose what I try to do is look at people who are exemplifying interesting aspects of that and talk to them about what makes that interesting, especially people who've come out with a niche that's unique and that, you know, they'd never have been able to go and get a job as, but instead they've crafted something because of a passion or a set of experiences or knowledge or attributes, and they've combined that in a unique way. We've got an episode dropping this week, for example, with a woman who is a co-living consultant, and she specializes in helping hospitality businesses transition to providing services for digital nomads. Now, that would never have existed 3 years ago. You know, she has a background in hospitality. She's now a digital nomad. She's had some poor Airbnb experiences, you know, and she put all of those things together to work with providers to say, okay, there's this new kind of traveler who they've got money to spend. They might stay a bit longer, but they need this, this, and this, and they're not your typical tourists. And she's made a consultancy out of that. So those are the kind of stories which really fascinate me. And it is, I mean, you mentioned the episode with Gonzalo Hall about community, and community is really what it's all about. So staying in those conversations, and because of the distributed nature of the freelance community of solopreneurs and nomads, that conversation tends to be online. So, you know, I can stay in different communities and conversations and listen to threads or trends, and you think, okay, that's really interesting. We've got an episode coming up reviewing digital nomad and remote work visas around the world, for example, because that's such an interesting topic. And it's one I've been putting off tackling the episode on because there's a new one coming out every week. And, you know, that would be a full-time job, just trying to keep track of this changing legislation. So I thought, no, hang on a minute, think like a freelancer, think like a collaborator, go and find someone who's doing this already and is staying on top of it and publishing about it regularly. So that's what I've done. And I'm arranging an interview with that person who would know far more about it than I ever could. So it's the network is the net worth, is the cliche, but there's somebody out there who's done the thinking, done the preparation, has the informed point of view on it. So, you know, all I do is talk to them really and get them to share it with my audience.
No, that's awesome. And you do a great job of it. I absolutely love it. And I think it's sort of, you know, back to, you know, what you a comment earlier about the community, it sort of ties into the remote work because you can build community. Like you said, the community is all online. It's all digital. And you can build that sense of community, that sense of camaraderie online via community. Remote, you know, so you can do that. You can sit in a coffee shop and, you know, build with someone. My colleagues at Zoom, I think my closest colleagues, there's, you know, four that come to mind. I never met them in person. I'd met other people from, you know, different work events, traveling to certain places and just meeting them in offices. But then like my core group, I never actually met them in person. We still have not met in person till this day.
Yeah.
It's been well over 5-6 years. Haven't met them in person at all. We still talk, we still communicate every day as if we still worked together. But we build a really good camaraderie and a really good relationship. And so it absolutely is doable. And, you know, I think that community feeling, you have to be open to it. You have to be open to want to build with, you know, your fellow person, whether that's a colleague or just someone that you meet who is in the same industry, may not necessarily be a colleague, but could potentially be a mentor or a mentee, or just, you know, a friendly advisor of some sort. I think that's key. I think that's important for basically your progression as a person and whatever business, whether it's a freelance business or a startup business, like you said, I think that's important. Like, that's so key. Yeah. Let's talk about your book, Healthy Happy Homework, I believe.
Healthy Happy Homeworking. I was starting to write this in 2019, which is another really good example of why you can't predict the future. The reason I was putting that book proposal together was I was coming up on my 20-year anniversary of working from home, which is very easy to date by the arrival of my millennium baby, who is now a millennium 22-year-old, and it's towering over me. But yeah, I certainly at that point thought I knew everything there was to learn about working from home. I was looking forward to bringing that to the world. And then, of course, the balloon went up, everything changed. There were suddenly a lot more experts out there, but there was an awful lot of noise too. And I realized, of course, people didn't want a big Bible of my experiences, but what they needed was more actionable, insightful, help, how do I fix this kind of content. So it turned into, can I call it a book series? It's only two books so far. There's the third one is in the works, but it hasn't come to the page quite yet. You call it a book series,
absolutely.
But there's also a website and blog as well. And I haven't done a dedicated podcast for it because then I transitioned into the future as freelance, because working from home for some people has now developed negative connotations. Now they're not being forced to do it anymore. So I prefer to think of the future of work more flexibly and work from anywhere. And that's where a lot of the interesting stuff is going on. But a lot of people still choose to work from home. I do. It's my default. So I was very interested in writing about that, in particular about the sort of the stuff that people don't talk about, like the barriers to it, the psychological boundaries, the making space in your home and your head, how you disconnect at the end of the day, how you deal with other people in your neighborhood and in your home. Obviously, a lot of that has changed now that there's more accustomedness to working from home. But there are things like even hiring for work from home positions that used to be incredibly difficult when most people had never actually experienced it for themselves. And now a great deal has shifted. You know, people know how they feel about working from home. But when you're faced with making a choice about it, I think people need quite a lot of self-awareness. And so I hope that some of them do still read in-depth books about it. Apparently nobody reads anymore, and that's why podcasting and video casting is so much in the ascendant. And it's important to do lots of different kinds of media to get the message out. But it's also quite interesting to do the inner thinking as well about what do I need to feel I've done a job well, to feel that I can log off for the end of the day, to feel that this is my workspace, even if I'm sharing that with my life space. I might be sharing it with a partner or family or other people. And what does that look like? So it does really interest me, the whole idea of working from home, but it starts with that location independence, with decoupling work from a place. And then work from home is one aspect of that. And it's one I'm going to keep writing about because it's such an easy, straightforward one for most people.
It really is. And, I think part of it, what you're saying is that it now work from home had sort of a negative connotation for some people. I think people romanticized working from home a lot. They romanticized the idea of it and weren't brutally honest with themselves. Obviously, I think it was harder to work from home for, parents with small children during the pandemic that they also had to homeschool their child.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that was like. But again, it was coming with you have to be completely honest with yourself. It helps if you have a really great support team, whether it's spousal mm-hmm. support or just work support from your, managers or colleagues to say, hey, during this time, I have to be on top of my kid so that he doesn't go to Netflix instead of doing his school. Can you please cover me for this? It's a lot of, you have to be honest and ask your friends for help, ask your community for help. And sometimes that community is your work colleagues. Understanding that they may be in the same situation, but it's a give and trade. You don't just take. Sometimes you have to give. Yeah. And it's, being honest. Just be brutally honest, not only with your colleagues, but with yourself, and say, this isn't as easy as I thought it was. No, I'm working more hours. Instead of waking up at 6 and going into the office at 8, I'm waking up at 6 and starting at 6:30.
And logging on. Yeah. That's so no good. I hope that we're getting better at that honesty now with ourselves and with each other. Mm-hmm. And if there is one positive legacy of what we've all been through collectively, I hope it's a little bit more both self-awareness and the ability to express it and to ask for help. Absolutely. And not have to front up this sort of hustle culture and I'm on top of everything. And we've all had glimpses into each other's kitchens and spare bedrooms and things through our Zoom cameras. We've all had a little bit more insight into each other's personal lives. Yeah. I mean, certainly as a journalist, I thought it was great when I was interviewing people, for tech publications, it's often quite senior, very busy people, and they're just there to give you some remarks about their funding round or whatever. And they don't really want to go too far off the press release. But then suddenly when a 2-year-old climbs on their lap in the middle of the interview or something, you reach a whole new level of disclosure and a bit more insight into them as a human. And it gets there really quickly that you actually get some insight. So I really liked that. Often with trying to develop a rapport in a short interview, it's quite challenging, especially through a screen. So when everyone was working from home, it was great.
Yeah, it's awesome. I truly think that it was a blessing in disguise, and I say in disguise because obviously the pandemic was a horrible thing. But I think that it was sort of, it showed people that there is a different way to work, and it opened up a lot of people's eyes to how the future, that it's not the future of work. It was like the current of work. It was just the current status.
It was all there. And what it did, it pushed some people over a ledge that they never would. Oh, no, we could never work from home. Our culture would never sustain it. People wouldn't like it. It wouldn't work for us. Basically, they can't say that anymore because it either did or it didn't. The evidence is in now. Even things like the shift to cloud communications, a lot of places they still had some legacy servers here and there and they weren't quite ready. And then it was suddenly hang on a minute, we've got to fix this. And you know what? They did. And it worked and you can't roll that back. So all of that technology existed, including fully remote teams, but it wasn't common. And it was easy for people to say, that will never happen here, whereas they can't do that anymore. The proof is in the pudding.
Oh, my God. Quick question, just as we wind down. Mm-hmm. So in staying with the work from home and remote work mentality, what is one thing from the office which, you know, for you was, you know, over 20 years ago, as you said, that you wish you could do or you wish you had in the work from home atmosphere, if anything? Maybe it's nothing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm really struggling to go back that far, honestly, because since that time, I've been working from home in so many different situations, in different countries. Mm-hmm. I've built and scaled teams. I've been self-employed very happily for the last 5 years. And honestly, there isn't anything I miss. I'm very lucky at doing journalism and consultancy work that I get to glimpses into lots of different kinds of teams and organizations and work. And I, you know, yes, occasionally you see things like the social aspects that everyone's going for a drink after work and things like that. That's great if it works for them in that moment. And that's one thing you don't get when you work from home, especially if you choose to go and work in a different country. But you get so much more as a trade-off that honestly, you know, I can't say I miss that. I suppose there's those building relationships with people in your organization who you don't work with directly, that they just happen to be the one who, I mean, it was so long ago, I tell you, it was in the smoking room that you used to sometimes bump into people that, I mean, we are talking about another century, another millennium here, but, you know, friends that you made there. Whereas now, if you were working in the same organization, but in different departments, you would never learn about each other's bad habits and you might not develop those particular friendships. Obviously, that is more than outweighed by the opportunities to develop connections around the things that matter to you, where you actually choose to live and how you want to spend your time in your life. Those were like the incidental friends, like the parents of your kids' friends, you know, and things like that, that you sort of picked up along the way. And sometimes you picked out some gems and you wouldn't have met them if your kids hadn't been at that playgroup or whatever. It's the same with the workplace. So yeah, I suppose that's the only thing. It was a different set of spontaneous acquaintance.
You know, I'm actually, it's refreshing to hear you say that, because I think most people that I've spoken to, they always find that they miss the office so much. And I'm wondering, okay, maybe those people weren't meant for remote work. And I find it's very rare that I find someone like me that basically has, like, I don't miss anything from the office. I don't. I've been remote work, you know, just a little under 10 years or so. And I can't say that I miss anything from the office. Like the time that I spend commuting, I can do so much more things productive, you know, be productive at home, be productive at work, because it's an easy commute for me from the bedroom to my office. So I don't miss anything. I'm not worried or stressed. How's my dog doing? You know, did she eat all her food? Did everything? You know, I'm not concerned or worried about anything. I can get up, walk around the block, take my little 2-3 minute break, 5 minute break, 10 minute break, whatever it is, come back, have a clear head. So I don't miss anything. And it's very rare, because usually the people that I talk to, they'll go on and on about everything that they miss. And I'm like, why don't you go back to an office, man? Like, you sound miserable.
Yeah. Or why don't you see if there's something that you could adapt actually within, you know, if you've decided to work from home or your organization has decided that, if it's something about the social aspect, then there'll be some other way to fulfill that, or the exercise of walking to the station or something. Well, there's your front door, you know, there's always a way to replicate that. But it's like anything, when if you're feeling a bit, oh, something's missing, you've got to do the inner work first of figuring out exactly what it is. And it's hard. And then there'll be some way to reproduce it in your life if it matters.
Absolutely. I am going to put everything in the show notes, but I do want to thank you so much. But I do have one final question that I have no idea what I'm about to ask you. I think I do. I think it was a Twitter topic a while back. When you're not working out of office, do you put an out of office message? Because you're not technically in an office anymore.
No, I don't anyway, because I never raise any expectation of immediate replies to email or any other messaging.
Perfect.
I'm just not interested in telling people I'm going to get back to them on a certain time, because it doesn't matter. The Slack team I'm in with the client for the podcast, if I'm going to be away for like a week or something, I'll post a message there and just say, hey guys, I'm offline. Yeah. But they know, you know, what I always try to do with teams that I work with is move towards managing the work in a project space, whether that's a Trello board or an Asana group or whatever, so that all the stuff they need to know is there. They don't need some kind of pinging backwards and forwards. So, yeah, I think it's fine if you do. If you're used to if you have that established expectation that you will reply if you're there, and if you aren't, you won't. But I'd far rather guide that expectation in the first place. That's not what email's for, in my opinion.
Yeah, perfect. Maya, thank you so much. This has been very fun talking to you. I can't wait for everyone to hear it. And I will put everything in the show notes, your podcast, links to your books, everything. Thank you so much, Maya.
I've really enjoyed it too. Thanks for having me, Gabe. Did you know?